Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Eating disorders. This is National Eating Disorders Week, a time set aside to remind us that these disorders are a major health problem and can have fatal consequences. 1 in 10 Americans will suffer from eating disorders during his or her lifetime. And with me to talk about the issue and what can be done to deal with it are Dr. Kimberly McCallum, medical director and founder of McCallum Place, the Eating Disorder Treatment Center. Lisa Eichen-Sokolik is executive director of the Missouri Eating Disorders Association. Robin Jonas is an adult who is in recovery. And Melody Miller is a parent with a daughter in recovery. Ladies, thanks so much for being with us today. And congratulations on getting here in all this bad weather. It's great to have you. Kim, let me start with you. Can you give us some sense of the problem in this community?
We think around 600,000 people are suffering at any given time in the greater Missouri area, greater St. Louis area. And you might not know it, but not only young women have eating disorders, young men, older women also have eating disorders. We're seeing it in many populations. Eating disorders are very complex and difficult to treat, so it's important to get early intervention. But there's a big need.
A big need. Obviously, there is, with 600,000 being the number you're using. Lisa, let me turn to you and ask if Kim has alluded to it. Is there a basic profile of someone who has an eating disorder?
Well, what's interesting about people that have eating disorders is actually anyone can have an eating disorder. There is not necessarily a certain type of person. Anyone can be prone to an eating disorder. There are a lot of factors at play. There's biological issues that can be a part. Different people have different things going on in their life that might trigger them to have an eating disorder. So really anyone is a possibility for anyone out there to end up having an eating disorder, no matter what their age is, their sex is, their economic background. Anyone can have an eating disorder.
Well, I ask that question because I think it's generally perceived that this is basically a problem among young women.
Right. And that really is a myth. This really isn't just a girl's disease. They're reporting that about 10 to 30% of males have eating disorders. And though most people think that it's something where it's about high school students or college student age, it's really across the spectrum. We see people that are having eating disorders in their 40s, 50s, even their 60s. So it's really not a young girl's disease, and it can affect anyone at any time.
And Kim, let me come back to you. When we're talking about eating disorders, let's define what they are. But one thing I do want to point out, it's not only denying food or purging food, it's also eating too much, isn't it?
Right, right. So an eating disorder is characterized by disordered eating, which is not regulating your eating with your energy needs. So, you know, you can eat too much, you can binge eat, and binge eating is eating a large amount of food in a short period of time and feeling a lot of shame and a sense of loss of control. You can restrict and be afraid of gaining weight, or you can have a big imbalance in what you're doing. So you can be running 10 miles or 20 miles a day and just under eating to fuel for the exercise. Purging is really common with eating disorders, and preoccupation with body image and size is an important feature for most folks.
Well, let's turn to Robin now that you're in recovery, correct?
Yes, sir.
And you were reacting when Dr. McCallum was talking about the various phases that people go through. What's your story?
My story as a teenager in college, I developed a serious eating disorder and was hospitalized, went through intense treatment, and have always been getting help. 27 years later, I had a relapse and was doing bad habits and purging by exercise and restricting, and went through treatment and finally have realized how detrimental eating disorders can be and how they hurt so bad.
What was going through your mind in doing this? I mean, was there a rationale?
There was no rationale. Yeah. At that point, by the time you start losing this weight, you really cannot begin to be rational in your thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me turn now to Melody. You're dealing with it from a different angle. Your daughter is explain to me what the status of your daughter is at this moment.
Currently, my daughter is 28 years old, and she has had her eating disorder for the last approximately 8 years. And she's in recovery, still working with a team. She has a medical doctor, a psychiatrist, a psychologist, and therapist, and then a dietitian that she sees. She sees the dietitian and the therapist on a weekly basis, so she's staying, you know, in recovery really because of that, I believe. But she had been going to college and realized that, you know, I realized finally that she had taken her eating levels to something that was medically concerning. And we finally got her in treatment. She went to McAllen Place. She's been in a treatment center in Denver as well called Eating Recovery Center. So she's had a long road to recovery, but she is currently doing very well.
And which of the disorders has she been experiencing?
She has been diagnosed with anorexia nervosa. So hers is a restrictive eating disorder. That's primarily where she had a significant fear of food, any kind of intake of calories at all. She didn't want to drink anything because that had anything with calories would be something that would put her into a tailspin because she just had a negative image of herself, her body image. And she had anxiety that was an underlying issue. And she was coping with that anxiety through her eating disorder. And that's primarily how that happened with her.
Robin, was this your condition as well?
Yes. Yeah. My condition was I was a compulsive exerciser and restricted, had thoughts that I didn't need this, excluded a lot of different foods from my diet. And at one point, I was starting to turn to be a bulimic and realized I can't do this.
And Kim, if you would tell our audience what a bulimic is.
Sure. Bulimia refers to a pattern of binge eating and purging, either by typically vomiting or laxatives, although some will consider excessive exercise as a strategy of undoing the calories. And folks with bulimia are so disorganized with eating that it's really scary and confusing to face the next meal after a binge and a purge. It can really affect your metabolism and your thinking. But, you know, as is being described, when you have an eating disorder, your mindset is so disordered. It's so different than how you would be thinking if you were rational. And it's as if your thoughts are hijacked. And you can't, your anxiety is so high, you can't face the next meal. And so what you do is you avoid it until you can't anymore, and then you lose control. And this is why it's such a hard cycle to break.
One of the things that I've always heard with regard to anorexia is that those who suffer from the problem, and I'll ask both of the ladies here about that, is that you always think you're overweight. Is that correct?
Yes.
Robin?
Yes. No matter what you think, even if you've lost a certain amount of body weight, you always think you're overweight.
Situation, I assume, is the same with your daughter,
yes,
Melody.
Yes, they don't. It was hard for me as a parent to recognize that when Amanda saw herself, it was totally unlike what we see. I mean, her picture of herself would be almost like a mirror at a carnival where, you know, you see the heavier person. That's how she saw herself. And it was only through treatment that I think we're beyond that at this point.
Lisa, impression I get from Melody is that you saw the problem developing and you moved in to do something about it. Is this typical that a third party would become involved like this?
Yes, it's very typical that a third party would be involved in this because, unfortunately, the person, when they are in the disease, they are not usually at a place where they can get help for themselves. So it's important that if you ever see someone that has any of the signs or symptoms of an eating disorder, that you step in and get them help. Because the reality is that an eating disorder, it's not a phase and it's not a choice. And that the only way a person can get beyond their eating disorder is by getting treatment and by having a full treatment team. And so it really takes the action of someone stepping in.
But what does one look for? I mean, that you're on dangerous turf here if you start getting involved in other people's lives in this way.
Absolutely. It is, it can be, but what you really have to look at is the big picture. And if the signs and symptoms are there, you're better off being wrong than not getting involved and having someone get really sick. And eating disorders are a very fatal disease. And you don't want to be in that place where you could have said something. And it's also important to know that if you go to confront that person, that their reaction to you might be with denial or anger or frustration, and that it's important to get them help anyway.
Kim, what are the signs and symptoms to look for?
Being preoccupied with body size, shape, and weight, inspecting yourself in the mirror, frequent weighing of yourself, binge eating, being secretive eating, losing your ability to sit down with your family and friends. Most folks, as their eating disorder develops, they become more and more isolated because this noise, what I call hungry brain, this preoccupation and distorted thinking, just takes over. And so social withdrawal is common.
Well, the symptoms you've just given are symptoms for the person who is suffering from the problem. What about the person who's observing it? I mean, what can they look for? You're looking at Lisa as if you want Lisa to answer the question.
Okay. So if you are concerned that someone might have an eating disorder, one thing you might look for is, like Dr. McCallum mentioned, that they might isolate, they might stop doing activities they like. They might be excusing themselves during or after meals. You might see changes in their mood patterns. Their weight might fluctuate. One important sign to look for especially is if someone's fainting or they're dizzy, because that's not something that's mm-hmm. normal for anyone. So if anyone says that they're dizzy or fainting, they need serious medical attention. If someone's body comparing, all of those things are signs that you should be looking for. And because most people, not all, but most people with eating disorders pick up on behaviors and patterns from actually all of the eating disorders, it's important to be really aware of what's going on with them. And if you do think someone has an eating disorder, the best thing to do is to get an evaluation. Mm-hmm. And there are many places in St. Louis that you can have an evaluation. There are many therapists that are eating disorder specialists that can provide a evaluation for you in treatment centers. And you can go and get an evaluation, and that's the best way. You either need treatment or you don't. And if you need treatment, there's many different levels, starting at residential, which is 24 hours a day, all the way down to outpatient, where Melody's daughter is at, where you're just seeing a treatment team every week. But really the only way to fight this disease is through treatment.
Well, we'll get back and talk more about that. I have to take a break. We'll do that now. We're talking about eating disorders. My guests in studio are Dr. Kim McCallum, medical director and founder of McCallum Place, which is an eating disorder treatment center. Also with me in studio is Lisa Eichen-Sokolik, executive director of the Missouri Eating Disorders Association. Robin Jonas is with us, and Robin is an adult who is in recovery. Melody Miller is a parent with a daughter in recovery. We'll come back and talk more about it. If you'd like to be a part of the conversation, we'd love to have you. Give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org. If you'd like to send a tweet, we'll take that at STL on air. This is St. Louis on the air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back to our conversation. Melody, let me turn to you. What was the tip-off? Lisa just told us what to look for. What was it specifically that you saw that alerted you?
Well, two things, really. My daughter had lost a significant percentage of her weight, and then she was in London doing a study abroad program. We went to visit her, and she wasn't able to eat anything with us. And the only thing I would see her eat would be maybe one thing a day, and it was very restrictive. I mean, she had picked out a certain food that was okay to eat, and that was all she ate, and it would be maybe one time a day. And it was obvious to me that was not enough to sustain life. When she came home, she went back to college right away, and I had her roommates from college contact me and say that they were seriously concerned about her because she had withdrawn. You know, she was isolating a little bit, and again, you know, they would be eating and they would go out and she wouldn't be able to go with them. So at her age, unfortunately, I mean, she was 20 at the time, so we had to get a medical guardianship as her parents in order to get treatment for her because she refused to get treatment on her own.
Sound familiar, Robin?
Yes.
Same kind of story?
Same kind of story. One of the key points that Lisa did mention, and Kim, that when you people with eating disorders and people try to get help, you are definitely in denial. You're angry. Your mind is so discombobulated that you think they're jealous. They're trying to be like you, but yet they're really trying just to get you help.
Is it difficult, Kim? Do you find it's difficult for people to admit that they have one of these disorder problems?
I do. They're afraid. They lack the confidence that they can change. And what we find is that most folks are not very motivated to recover, partly because they can't imagine being able to give up their behaviors as a way of coping with their distress, and partly because they haven't had the right kind of support to see that recovery is possible.
You know, I've seen some literature and some things on the internet with regard to eating disorders, and there's lots on the internet about it, as you well know. And one of the comments that struck me, I'll give it to you and get your reaction to. I'll start with you, Kim. Is why not just make them eat?
I think a lot of people misunderstand what's going on. Right? Yeah. When you have an eating disorder, it's not a choice. You know, you can't. You can't override it. You're not thinking rationally. And although part of what treatment does is provide structure and support and skilled exposure to food to break through their rituals, it's not so easy to just get someone to eat. And if you push someone without those skills, they're likely to shut down and avoid you.
Robin, could anyone have made you eat when you didn't want to?
They tried to, but it didn't happen. Okay. So
that's a wasted line.
People, it's a wasted line.
Yeah. Yeah. Melody, same thing, and then we'll go to Lisa.
Absolutely.
Lisa?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's important to remember that an eating disorder is a serious and complex mental and medical disease. And with that being said, even though it's called an eating disorder actually isn't about the food. It's about complex emotions and behaviors and coping mechanisms, and that it truly is a mental illness with medical ramifications to it as well.
Yeah. Let's talk about treatment now, and I'll start with you, Lisa. What's sure. You've alluded to this in the past, but in terms of the steps to take to go through a treatment process, what are they?
So the first step is to get an evaluation because.
And where do you get the evaluation?
Well, an evaluation. We are lucky that we have several treatment centers here in St. Louis. And you can call one of the treatment centers and schedule an appointment for a free evaluation. We have at our website, MissouriEatingDisorders.org, MOEatingDisorders.org. We have a resource page that lists eating disorder specialists on. You can go on there and find an eating disorder specialist. Some are in network and take insurance, some don't. But the first step is really getting a diagnosis and getting that either using the free evaluation from a treatment center or from an eating disorder professional is the first step. And then the next step is really finding out what level of a treatment is appropriate for you. There's residential treatment, which is a 24-hour treatment center. And then there's partial hospitalization, which is 7 days a week, usually 10 hours a day that you're in treatment. And then there's also intensive outpatient, which is IOP, where you can go anywhere between 3 to 5 days a week for about 4 hours a day for treatment and get supervised meals. And then there's outpatient.
Forgive me for interrupting,
yeah,
but
sure.
What is the treatment?
Yeah, Dr. McCallum probably right. can speak to that, since right. she has a treatment center.
So first, you need to evaluate for medical complications because there's a big safety issue. There's a up to 20% death rate in young people with serious anorexia. And so you screen for medical complications. And then psychological and nutritional care are really important. So this is what differentiates eating disorder treatment from, say, treatment of anxiety or depression or OCD. The psychological treatment is around building courage and confidence to face your fears, first around food and body image, overriding some of the ways your brain is confusing you. And only later on can you get at other more traditional psychotherapy issues. So it's a real specialized kind of psychological intervention. And then the nutritional piece is, you know, if you're underweight, you have to restore to a natural body weight, or the crazy thinking, disordered thinking won't quiet down. And then you've got to do meal exposures to really reset your pattern of eating. So it's a lot, it's complicated. And the final component is that eating disorders often travel with other psychiatric conditions like mm-hmm. anxiety or depression or even post-traumatic stress disorder. So you have to treat that too. And you need to evaluate that because that can hinder progress.
How long typically does recovery take? And let me add to that. I get the impression from what I'm hearing, it's like alcoholism. You never fully recover. And I think Robin is testimony to that. You came back. Too much in that question there. Let's start with Kim.
The good news is that full recovery with an eating disorder is possible for most people. But if you have a enduring illness and you don't get aggressive treatment, you're more at risk for having the disorder over a longer period of time. Most people, it takes a couple of years to fully recover, you know, 2 to even 10, 15 years. What's really rewarding for me is working with people who've had an eating disorder for 15 years and finally getting them to full recovery. It's, you know, so we in eating disorders don't give up because you can always get someone to a higher level of recovery.
But Robin, relapse is possible.
Relapse is possible.
And that's what happened to you.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Anything you want to add to what Dr. McCallum has just said?
But Dr. McCallum, one of the things I think that definitely, and Lisa said, intensive treatment is the only way to go if someone you love or know has an eating disorder. And there are a bunch of factors that are involved. And the person that is trying to get the patient help needs to know that it's not just something that's going to leave overnight.
In terms of anything you want to add, Lisa, to this, we have to get back to you on this whole treatment process.
No, I just want to make sure that everybody knows that recovery is absolutely possible, and it happens for a lot of people and is long-term.
But it is long-term, and there has been some reference to insurance being a part of this. It sounds like this can be a costly process.
Absolutely. It absolutely is. Just like getting treatment for any medical condition that someone might have, insurance is a factor. We're fortunate that most treatment centers and providers do take insurance or have sliding scales for patients because they want to work with patients and they want to see people recover and be healthy. So that's a good option for people. But yes, insurance is definitely can be an obstacle because unfortunately, a lot of times the insurance companies look at the number on the scale and not realize that an eating disorder is a mental illness and it's about the thoughts and behaviors around the illness and not really about what the scale says. Because in reality, you can't tell who has an eating disorder by looking at them or by what they weigh. Mm-hmm.
Do you want to address the financial part of it, Melody?
Yes, I was very fortunate when my daughter was in the residential treatment that we had an insurance company who understood what an eating disorder was and how much, you know, time treatment sometimes takes. Amanda was in treatment for over a year, which was extremely expensive, would have been extremely expensive had we not had the insurance we had. Many of her friends that she developed during treatment did not have that luxury. They ended up having to be released from treatment prior to achieving recovery. And unfortunately, that's the type of person who ultimately is going to have to go back into treatment later. And if the insurance companies had just understood that, they would have allowed them to continue.
Robin, your thoughts on this whole expense part of it?
It is very expensive, but it's very important to continue with treatment. If insurance even sees how much you weigh, it's not about that. It's about doing the whole process of getting help.
Kim, I wanted to get back to this expense thing and the way insurance companies react to it, because it seems to me if you're doing this to your body, you're probably doing damage to various organs within your body. Therefore, right, it would make a lot of sense on the part of insurance companies to stick with these people before it becomes a more expensive problem for them.
Absolutely. You know, there's a high risk of osteoporosis, which is a loss of bone mineral density and cardiovascular compromise, gastrointestinal problems, you know, chronic reflux, constipation, and worse problems leading to your bowels not functioning at all. We know that if you don't get treatment to outcomes, which is full, you know, measures of recovery, that you're going to have more and more medical complications and also more and more psychological complications.
Sure. And that can be very expensive in the long run.
Right.
Our time is winding down. We have an email here. It's somewhat lengthy. I won't read it. But Lisa, let me come back to you because it deals with what teachers can do. I mean, what can they see in their students that can tip off the symptoms you mentioned, but what should they do?
Absolutely. So if a teacher is concerned that a student might have an eating disorder, what I would recommend, the first step that they do is actually contact the parents with the help of the guidance counselor at that school and sit down and talk to the parents about it. Because if you're dealing with a student, the luxury of that situation is that they're a minor, so you don't need their consent for treatment. So I would sit down with the parents and the guidance counselor and talk about your concerns and see if there are behaviors at home that match what they're seeing in school. But I would definitely reach out to the family members and then together reach out to the student.
I should point out that I guess it's tomorrow you're having an event. Is that correct?
We
are. And Maryville University present Eating Disorders panel discussion tomorrow at 5:30 p.m. in the Reed Hall Room at Maryville University. Everybody welcome to participate?
Everyone's welcome. It's a free panel, and the theme is there are going to be many survivors and treatment providers talking about their experience.
So this would not necessarily be for people or families who are suffering from eating disorders. It could be anybody interested in this.
Anyone that's interested in knowing more about eating disorders.
As time winds down, a final thought from you, Kim McCallum?
Just that eating disorders are serious and complex illnesses, and there are good treatments, and there is hope.
All right. Robin, do you have a final word you'd like to leave us with?
You just got to be persistent and know you are able to recover.
There's help out there for you. Melody?
Just to have the world at large understand that eating disorders are not a choice.
It's a sickness.
Yes.
Yeah. Lisa?
Yes. Yes, it's a serious mental illness with serious medical and mental complications to it, and that the only way to recover from an eating disorder is through treatment.
We'll leave it right there. I want to thank you all. Dr. Kim McCallum, thank you for being with us of the McCallum Place. Linsa Eichen-Sokolik of the Missouri Eating Disorders Association, Robin Jonas, and Melody Miller. Thank you so much for being with us. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.